Duplicate tape from 90 to 60.
Mrs. Guo, are your parents from China?
Yes, they're first generation Chinese. And my father is a Huiping. Mm-hmm. And my mother's village is very close by there, Sunning.
Mm-hmm.
And they both came to this country. My father first, when he was a young man of about 16, he mm-hmm. came to Canada, to the Vancouver area, and he was kind of a self-made man, like so many other Chinese. He was with a grocery store, and then on his own, he went inland from Vancouver, and he became and studied tailoring with a Japanese tailor, and he became a very good tailor in his young days, and he was a tailor who did custom suits for men and women, and that was his profession. Mm-hmm. So then he went back and forth from China about twice and married my mother when they were 18, but didn't bring her over to Canada until they were in their early 30s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was born in Stockton. They didn't have me until they were in their 40s. And apparently they weren't able to have children. And so I didn't come along until they're almost when they reached middle life.
Uh-huh. Okay. Was there any particular reason for your father's going to Vancouver? Did he know anybody there?
Yes. There were some relatives who brought him over to Vancouver. But mm-hmm. his own father, that is my paternal grandfather, was an immigrant who went to Silver City, New Mexico. And so the father and son never met in this country. But he sent money home to send my father over with relatives.
Uh-huh.
So he was just a youngster when he was brought over to Vancouver.
What did your grandfather do in New Mexico?
Well, I had conflicting stories about him. He owned a restaurant, for one thing, and then I think he did some mining in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So, okay, your father brought your mother back in the 30s and then remained in Vancouver for a while?
Yes, they lived in Vancouver for a while. They came over in 1918, and my mother used to always tell this story of how she saw so many people with bandages on, you know, and there was a flu epidemic in 1918. So they wore these bandages and mouthpieces, gauzes, and that was her first impression of America. And she used to tell me stories about it. And it was right after World War I when this great influenza epidemic hit North America and people were dying like flies. So they settled in Vancouver for a while.
And so was it, excuse me, was it 1918 that they arrived in Vancouver?
In Vancouver as uh-huh. a couple, but my father had come earlier than that.
Uh-huh. Okay, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. And so then they lived in Vancouver for a number of years. They went to Seattle because my mother's brother had settled in Seattle. You know, when I say my father's first generation, actually he's second generation because his grandfather came to this country,
his father,
but he never settled down. He died, and the story was that some concubine, you know, poisoned him. He probably lived with some Spanish woman, and but my father's mother never came to this country. Like so many of the mm-hmm. women never did. So mm-hmm. my mother, my father's mother, that is my paternal grandmother, mm-hmm. was always in China
mm-hmm.
and stayed on in China until she died.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So perhaps my father would be second generation, would you say? That would be second generation.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So went to Seattle.
And my mother's brothers, of which there were seven, six of them all came to this country. The first one died in China. So all six brothers came to this country, settled along the coast, Seattle, down to Stockton, down to Fresno. And they were all gamblers. They were very lucrative. They were owners of gambling houses in Seattle and in Stockton. And so that's how my mother came to Seattle. And they settled in Seattle for a while. And then my father was in the tailoring business. And then I guess because of my mother's brothers and aunts, they came to Stockton to settle. And that's where they lived the longest. And I was born and raised in Stockton.
Mm-hmm. When were you born?
In 1923.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only child.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents were in their 40s by the time I was born.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you went through schools in Stockton?
Right. I went to all my schooling until I finished junior college. Then I went to Berkeley for my last 2 years, and then University of Chicago for my graduate work in sociology. I had my master's in sociology.
Mm-hmm. When was that?
In 1947,
mm-hmm.
I got my master's.
Okay. Can you just give me the names of the other schools in Stockton?
Yeah. I went to Hazleton Grammar School, that was the elementary school, and then the Stockton High School, and then Stockton Junior College, and then from there it was University of California in Berkeley, and University of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. What did you have a specialization in Berkeley?
Yes, it was social welfare, and then I was thinking of going to get my MSW, but then the China Institute offered me a bigger scholarship to do a special study in sociology. So I took it and went to the Department of Sociology at University of Chicago. And at that time, it was one of the outstanding schools of sociology. So I did my master's on the occupational status of Chinese Americans.
What does that mean?
Well, I took a sample of graduates, males and females, and from the University of California, I think a 20-year span of graduates from 1920 through 1940, and I traced their occupational careers after college.
Mm-hmm.
So I interviewed and used questionnaires and so forth. And that study was one of the earliest studies done on occupational careers of Chinese Americans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was very surprised when this whole thrust of studies on Chinese America became popular and the Asian American studies were set up. Then all of a sudden they were digging out my thesis out of the library, and it was published, part of it was published in the American Journal of Sociology, and then all of a sudden I had people calling me up, wanted to interview me, wanted to read my thesis, and here I had buried it for so long already. I'd forgotten about it, you see, and because I had gone on to other things. But it was kind of interesting because they said that was one of the earliest kind of accurate studies,
mm-hmm.
that was done on occupational careers of Chinese Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived with the sociologist Rose Ham Lee, who was one of the earliest women sociologists among Chinese, and who did the very earliest studies on Chinese America in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And her first book is one of the classics in studies on Chinese.
Right, her name is very familiar in the field.
The Chinese in America.
Mm-hmm.
She was a woman sociologist who headed one of the first Chinese American women to head a department in sociology at the Roosevelt College. So then from Chicago in 1947, I went to China to teach sociology at the Jingmin College.
Where is that?
That's in Nanking. And my husband had finished his doctorate in personnel and guidance at the University of Columbia Teachers College and gotten his EdD there. So both of us were interested in going to China to help reconstruct China, so to speak. And he was asked to be the Dean of Business Administration at Jingmin College, and I was asked to teach sociology. And when I got there, I was also asked to work with the Dean's Office in being the Director of Extracurricular Activities. At that time. And, well, we stepped into a hornet's nest because just at that time, you know, the communist movement began to get very active, and I had to learn my Mandarin just very fast because I was working with students, many of them so-called professional students who were sales, communist sales students, you know, and they were there on the campus as regular students, but their function was to turn the students and win them over to communism. So we had a very exciting time in China right after the Sino-Japanese War. And it was a very chaotic time, but fascinating in watching how China slipped from being a still kind of a republic into a socialist state. So it was an exciting time.
So when did you leave China?
We left China in the spring of 49, and we escaped, so as to speak, from Nanking, which did not fall yet, but it we left Nanking when it was in the fall of November of 48, when the nationalist government was fleeing to Taiwan. And the city was collapsing. But actually it didn't fall into communist hands until the spring of 49. So then we went to Shanghai and waited for my husband to tie up loose ends in order for him to get a passport because he was a Chinese citizen at that time. And so we left Shanghai in the spring of 49, January.
And
came back to Oakland, where my parents lived. And then in Oakland, we lectured for about a year on China, and then it got dangerous to lecture on China. So I worked in Oakland as a social welfare worker for the time being, for about a year, until my husband came down here on one of his lectures and he was offered a business job. Because his undergraduate work was business. So then he worked for an import-export firm for about 11 years down here, and then he began his own import-export firm. And so we moved down to Los Angeles in 1950, and we've been here ever since.
What's the name of your husband's import-export firm?
Royal Trend.
Royal Trend?
Yeah.
We can backtrack a little bit. When did you meet your husband? You said you went with your husband to China.
Oh, well, in 1947, I was always very active in student movement work. So I met him at a student conference in New Hampshire. I met him in New Hampshire. And then he was still very active with the student movement, and I was too. And so then we got married in California, in Stockton, at the College of Civil, where I went to school.
And when was, when did you
get
married?
We got married in 46.
46.
Before we went to China.
What kind of student movement, student activities were you involved in?
Well, we were, these were Christian student movements, but the Christian student movements in the 40s and 50s, they were very strong movements in this country. And of course on the East Coast, there were a lot of politics involved in it. On the West Coast, it was not so much. It was more of a student movement that was partly a social get-together, but also popular topics, like I suppose you could call this, we were so-called activists in our days, you know. We took part in anti-Japanese war movement, and the kind of topics we discussed was integration, interracial marriages, family relationships, and our conferences. Mm-hmm. They were very strong movements that centered around a student Christian movement, but they were young people from not only churches, but from all the universities.
Mm-hmm. So you met your husband at one of these?
Yeah, in New Hampshire. And so we dated and then we got married the following year.
Mm-hmm. And you have one daughter and one son?
One daughter and one son. And my son went to UCLA for 7 years. And he's an attorney now.
Uh-huh.
And he was very active in the student movement. Very active. You know, he grew up during the Vietnam War years. So he was a student activist. Still an activist now. Then my daughter got her MSW at UCLA. And she came one student generation after the Vietnam War. So she was not that active. I wouldn't call her a
Mm-hmm. Okay. When you were younger, living with your parents, did you speak Chinese at home?
Yes, solely, because my parents didn't speak English at all.
So it was
so I learned Seiya. Mainly
Seiya. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then my father, when he was in his 50s, decided that tailoring was too tough of a business, especially for his eyes, you know, if he was going to not have to wear glasses. And he never did wear glasses until he was in his 70s, I think, for just for reading. But he decided he was going to be an herbalist. So he studied and studied with his professor and his predecessor, who was a well-known herbalist in Oakland, and became a very well-known herbalist in his last 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Here in
Oakland.
In Oakland?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was a fascinating man, a very determined man. And he was, once he was determined to study herbs, he really put his heart and soul into it. And he became a very fine herbalist.
Did he open up his own,
yeah,
uh-huh, his own shop?
He opened his own shops and Stockton, Visalia, and San Francisco, and then when his predecessor died, he took over the store in Oakland,
mm-hmm,
and carried that on till he died.
Mm-hmm. Did your mother work?
My mother was a seasonal cannery worker, just on and off. Other than that, she didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, did your parents study English at all?
No, my father spoke some broken English. Most of his patients were English speaking,
mm-hmm,
and he spoke a very broken English, but somehow he was able to communicate enough,
mm-hmm,
to have a business.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of his clients, even when he was a tailor,
mm-hmm,
as well as when he was an herbalist, were all English speaking people. So he was able to speak enough to get along,
mm-hmm,
but not fluently. My mother had a hard time.
Mm-hmm. Did they send you to Chinese school?
Uh-huh, when I was a kid. Chinese school was a playtime. Although I was an A student, I used to get teased by the kids and really crucified by the children because I was the a teacher's pet, you know, and I always could recite and, you know, I was always prepared and so forth. But I retained very little Chinese somehow. I went for maybe 3-4 years when I was a child.
Was that going after regular school?
After regular
you have
school.
To go to?
Right, uh-huh. Right. It stopped then. And I guess that stopped when I didn't continue after. I think I just got through not even junior high in the Chinese level.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
That was
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy Chinese school?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. But I guess the kids went there really after Chinese school, they hated it because that's why they were so naughty. And we played most of the time in Chinese school. See, most of the kids played. And we always remember the teachers that we had. And they try to be disciplinarians. And sometimes the boys would get into fights with the teachers. And they'd bring rotten tomatoes and throw them at the teachers, you know. It was always a discipline problem. Because by that time, the kids were so restless after Chinese school. And they really didn't know how to teach Chinese in those days, you know. And then a very interesting thing. My grandfather, my maternal grandfather, had all these sons who opened gambling houses, and they were very well-to-do. And in Stockton, the way my uncles honored my grandfather and grandmother was they put together a lot of money, and they built a Chinese school in honor of him. And as a child, I went to that Chinese school. It was a private school
mm-hmm.
first,
mm-hmm.
before I went to a public Chinese school, until that school closed. And because I was the youngest in the whole clan, I came at the very end of this Chinese school, but it operated for about 10 years, I think. But this was a private school founded by my uncles to honor their father, my grandfather.
Where was this?
It was in Stockton. Yeah, it was a nice school.
Where was the school?
It was in the southern part of town, and they bought this property, which was about half a block of property, and they had this lovely building on it, and they had a beautiful auditorium. I remember it so well. It was beautiful, gorgeous auditorium, and then it had a huge basement where we had all kinds of toys to play. Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And it had school rooms.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered it as a child, and I went there, and there were about 20 of us cousins, all cousins, and we spent our time just as children, just fighting among cousins. I grew up with 4 cousins, girl cousins my age, and we spent our time just arguing and fighting with these 4 little girls, you see, and we lived close by. The one cousin lived up on the north side of town. They were the flashy cousins, so as to speak, you know.
Uh-huh.
I had one uncle who was a dapper, and he was the first one who built a brick house in the northern part of the city that was taboo for Chinese at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they always drove a Packard. And so this side of my cousins came to school, came to learn Chinese, you see. And so we had a very nice time as kids. And then somehow, I think the school closed when, by the time I was maybe in junior high. So then I went to a couple of years of junior high school, maybe first year of junior high, maybe about maybe fourth, fifth grade, not
mm-hmm.
even junior high, fourth, fifth grade of Chinese school. That's all I can remember.
Mm-hmm. Did you stop due to lack of time?
I think so. Once I went into high school, I didn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because high school was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a junior high.
So Chinese school wasn't forced upon you? You
not too much. Not really. My parents wanted me to go, and I went along with a neighbor whose father drove us to Chinese school in a truck. In the back of his truck, I remember that very well.
Uh-huh.
No, I really, I loved studying. I was always an A student in both English and Chinese. Okay. I was a Phi Beta Kappa in school, you know, that sort of thing. I guess I was a square. So.
Okay. So how did acting come
well,
about?
Well, I came to Los Angeles. And by that time, I had
that was
taught
when?
For a little while. We came to Los Angeles in 1950,
mm-hmm.
and I got acquainted with some of the people in the industry, but I never was really interested until, let me see, what Love is a Many Splendor Thing. That was the movie that was being made. And I was asked to, if I were interested by Bessie Liu, who was an agent at the time, to be, they were looking for a tutor for Jennifer Jones, and they wanted her to emanate some of the Chinese mannerisms of the Hong Kong Chinese, and they wanted a British Chinese accent, so they asked me to go out to meet Henry King, the director. And so I said, sure, maybe I could do it. So Henry King said, fine, you fit the bill, except that you speak California English, and that will never do, because Jennifer Jones was playing a role of a British Chinese. Dude. So he said, but on the other hand, would you like to play Jennifer Jones's auntie? I said, sure. I've never had any acting experience, but he said, I think you would fit it very well. So that started me on all these character roles.
Mm-hmm.
And then prior to that, I had done one other role. There was a friend who called me up and said, oh, they're looking for a young girl. I said, ha ha ha, I laughed. And she said, they may not ever call you, but anyway, I just want to tell you that I gave your name to this agent who's looking for a young lady to play a role in some television show with Cesar Romero. And lo and behold, when she hung up, this agent called, and she said, are you 18? I said, oh, no, not by a long shot. She said, but do you look 18? I said, well, I don't know. So then by that time, my curiosity was piqued. And she said, why don't you get into a Chinese dress and come out and see me? And so I did. And she said, oh, yes, you look 18. And so she was patting me on the back. Anyway, so she took me out to a studio called Hal Roach's at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was introduced to five men. And one of those men happened to come from Stockton. See, so we made a connection at the
mm-hmm.
time. And so we yak, and we talked. And the agent had said, keep smiling.
Excuse me.